Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG tonight. Great day today. I've been getting a lot of things solved, a lot of things done. Taxes, license plates, that kind of stuff. I've also bought a new laptop for Mama JF. I had been buying a laptop for Mama JF pretty much the month we met, I believe. It was very early in our relation. And I didn't have much money then, so I bought her a decent i5. But it's been roughened by the time. Mama JF is a hardcore user. She throws her laptops, she drops her laptop sometimes, so it was starting to crack from everywhere. And now this time, since we have moved and we are in our new life, I had a little more money. And so I bought a i7, 12th gen, 1280p, 1.80 gigahertz, 16 gigs, DDR4, a half a terabyte SSD, NVIDIA GeForce 1650, and Windows 11 laptop. Oh my god, Mama JF is bringing her old laptop. I actually had to do metal repair on it because she was cracking it so much. I sticked these plates of metal so that the articulation could work. I've also made this whole L-shaped metal thing. Mama JF breaks laptops a lot. Are you excited about this new laptop?
How did this happen? I don't even know.
How did this happen? Well, you know, when you dance and you listen to music and you put the laptop on the microwave with steaming vapor going to it, and then, oops, it falls. That's how it happens.
It's the cooking.
The cooking?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Mama JF is like, she's making a 24-hour brat and there's steam coming out and it's going straight to the laptop. You have to get something for her that is solid, that can sustain female use of the laptop. I would characterize it this way, because I don't know of any man who would do this. Some random bloke says, get Mama JF to become a game developer. I'm gonna do Unreal Engine 5 game development. Okay, well, there's too much game developers out there, so I don't think we need an extra one. I will keep Mama JF as a 100% of the time female wife as a job. I prefer she does this. Wuju Summer says, hyped for the good show. Is it possible to help somebody out of self-hatred / hate of his own race, family, and culture, or are these people completely lost? My attitude is that they are completely lost, and I don't see why, anyways, you would spend time trying to convince them. To me, there's no such thing as persuasion. What you can do is reach a certain degree of spreading of your ideas so that they are out there, and see who responds to them by saying, hey, I like this ID. But you really never convince someone. You really never change someone. What you do is you appear publicly, you share a couple of IDs, and you see who does that filter out and who does that filter in. To me, that's what public engagement is about. It's about finding the people out there who are already predisposed to think just like you. You're not going to take a leftist who hates white people to convert them. You're not going to make them change their view. If they ever end up liking the kind of stuff that I say, they were probably already, feeling uncomfortable with all these leftist talking points. There's lots of blackpilling on the internet today. This whole reflection around Elon Musk. Will Elon Musk save Twitter, given that he's engaging so much with the ADL and the People for Justice and whatever, but he's not engaging with the people who have been banned? The majority of the council should be the people who are oppressed by these TOS. Keith Woods was writing on Telegram, it has been nothing but black pills from Elon's Twitter feed since the takeover. There was a very simple path he could have went of firing the moderation team and sticking to a commitment to free speech, but he is already on the slippery slope of placating groups like the ADL and protecting celebrities from mean words. Personally, I never thought Elon would enforce an absolute free speech code on Twitter, but with that said, I also don't think there is much of a chance he will make it worse, given how much he promised to improve free speech. I think that realistically, the best case scenario would be that he is doing as much public consultation with the usual suspects as possible to soften the blowback when he reforms Twitter to be more free speech. He introduces a clear TOS with some kind of ban on hate speech, but basically allows any political speech. He allows a fair process for appealing previous suspensions, but high-profile people like Jared Taylor still get refused. Worst-case scenario? The new TOS is basically the status quo. Little changes apart from ending shadow banning practices and allowing conservative accounts to more easily prosper. A few high-profile accounts like Trump and some of the people banned for COVID misinformation are reinstated next year, but nothing much comes of the appeal process. One thing that won't happen is Elon deciding to let previously banned people back on new accounts. Twitter is getting better at detecting ban evasion, and I don't see any reason why Musk would relax this, since it's also a priority of his to crack down on spam or platform manipulation. So what really matters is how serious he is about the new appeals process and what new terms of service those appeals will be judged against. Scenario 2 would be a disaster for us because it would mean the end of us on the platform and possibly placate Republicans in the US enough not to make a big issue about censorship in the future. I still lean toward the more optimistic scenario being more likely because I don't believe he would have bought Twitter if he didn't want to fundamentally change it, but I'm definitely less optimistic than I was a week ago. That is a very good commentary from Keith Woods, as always. Listen, it starts very badly that Elon Musk hasn't already fired everyone who's ever been involved in any censorship. The fact that these people are still the very same people, that we have a Yoel Roth in charge of the trust and safety, and this guy has been saying that Trump was literally a Nazi. If Trump is literally a Nazi, I mean, how will Elon come close to get this guy to allow legal speech on Twitter? This was the initial statement of Elon Musk. If it's legal, why not leave it on the platform? We're very far from this. Now, Elon is making funny jokes on his Twitter account. Apparently, he's enjoying his new ownership of the platform, but will he fix it? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was saying, laughing my ass off at the billionaire earnestly trying to sell people on the idea that free speech is actually an $8 per month subscription plan. Elon Musk answers, your feedback is appreciated, now pay $8. Us peasants to the blue check mark, look at me, we are the celebrities now. He says, Twitter is simply the most interesting place on the internet, that's why you're reading this tweet right now. Someone, a blue check mark, answers, that's why it's so sad watching you play with it like it's a toy and you're a child. And Elon Musk says $8. So Elon Musk, basically, his position at this point is just pay me $8. You can complain all you want, but you got to pay me $8. I like the idea. I like the idea because it puts a value on free speech, and the leftists cannot appreciate this value because the leftists never have their free speech taken from them. The leftists have claimed that elections were stolen. They have claimed that George Bush was a terrorist. They have claimed all sorts of fake news across the years. they have made false statements about vaccines and medical stuff. There was never a single push for let's put under control the tendency of leftists to lie. There was never an attempt at censoring them in mass. And it all happened when the right started doing any of these things. Then they started inventing special rules so that the right would get caught by the rule, but not the left. So leftists don't understand the value of free speech. Personally, if Elon Musk is telling me it's $8 JF, but you can express yourself like you want, I have no issue at all paying $8. To me, it's like it would be absolutely ridiculous that anyone would buy a Big Mac per month and not be offended that you have to pay $10. And yet, your entire platform for free expression and an access to the entire world, you're not willing to pay $8 for this, I'm totally fine. I appreciate that there will be a free option also for people who can't afford it. I want people to fully be able to use Twitter, even if they can't pay the $8. But for a professional of the internet like me, $8 is not a problem. Chi Chi Ping says, JF's voice is very low volume. Hello. Okay, that should be higher volume. Let me know if I end up peaking or whatever. Cloud Warmer says, JF, these same people will pay $60 for a meal but not spend $5 on a USB-C charging cable. Yeah, I mean, it's these people are living in leftist states. Someone else was saying it wasn't low volume. Sound is good, normal level. Okay, I will lower it back then. Yes, in leftist states, it's unbelievable the amount that will go on the amount that will go out on a single meal, on a beer. I mean, you just go in a bar and you're gonna pay $8, $9 a beer. That's definitely less important to your life than free speech. I see Twitter as a utility, and so it makes sense. To me, it's the one subscription I wouldn't be offended to pay, because they tried to make subscriptions on everything, like razor blades. I'm never going to be subscribed to a razor blade delivery service. They caught someone that I know recently, someone in my family. They got the person to buy meal delivery. Holy shit. And you pay $30 per month and they will bring you a little pooch, like NASA style. Just empty the pooch on the plate and eat it in the microwave. And I will never do this. Part of the great pleasure of life is to interact with the free market of the grocery store. I'm entering the grocery store, I'm willing to buy whatever is the lowest price. If you're a salmon seller, find me a salmon piece that's $4 and I'll buy it. If the pork seller is selling me the pork for cheaper, I go for the pork. So that, to me, ordering with a fixed amount per month is absolutely ridiculous. Purple Tuna says, my question was, are carbs an essential nutrient? What don't you understand about what that means? Oh, he was commenting to Silver Spider. Yeah, carbs an essential nutrient. Yes. I think if you have zero carb, you are going to have maybe some problems long term. But for most people who have accumulated some fat energy, you could spend years without carbs, and like with the minimal amount of carbs, the kind of carb that you will find in animal meat and fat, and you would have you would be okay. So carbs, young people, little kids, they want carbs, and that makes sense. They need a lot of energy, and the proteins and fat that they ingest, they want to keep them, so they don't want to burn them away as they eat it. So carbs become a tool for growth for them. But yeah, some amount of carb is necessary as part of an healthy nutrition. All right, today is Ask Me Anything. I see that some people have already sent super chats. Thank you so much. If you'd like to ask a question tonight, you can come on the show. Just click on the Discord link below and join the waiting room. If I see someone on the waiting room and I'm ready to switch subject, I will slide you in the JF lounge and you can speak to the crowd and speak to me. Alternatively, you can also use Super Chats. Odyssey is my favorite platform for Super Chats. Don't hesitate to use the dollar button under the regular chat. That is my favorite way for receiving support for the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. Silver Spider sends a super chat, $10. Thank you so much. By the way, I've made an amazing month in super chats. It's amazing, probably because of white and Silver Spider and the regular givers. You guys were sending ridiculous amounts, hundreds of dollars here and there. That is what allowed me to pay for, and also the generosity of a big donor. That is what has allowed me to pay for the laptop of Mama JF. So thank you all for giving me wonderful months. It's great. Because I would be ready to continue this public service that I consider some kind. This public service of streaming without much money, but you guys are just too generous, so generous that I don't even have to think about working at McDo, because at this point I'm still making more money than I would at McDo. Silver Spider says, "Hey Jeff, the doctors really scared the shit out of my wife with her pregnancy, and I think she is afraid to get pregnant again. Baby is in excellent health in every way, but during the pregnancy, they kept being suspicious and making 3 appointments a week. What would you say to this?" That is so bad. That is so bad. Don't worry too much about a woman who says, "I'm not sure if I want to get pregnant again." Most of the time, nature... like, she's going to be just having sex with you, and you're going to be... And there's a problem with women. Okay, let's talk about this first. There is a problem with women where they want to use the uncertainty about the next baby to manipulate you psychologically. What they're looking for is compliments and begging from you. So here, I'm going to tell it to you right away. Don't let these things emotionally hurt you. Don't let these things... The problem is that us males, we respect the English language. And so if our wife says, "I'm not sure if I want to get the next baby," we're like, "Holy shit, she's not sure." Just take all the words that come out of the woman, package them up and down, package them left and right, compress. Now imagine that you have reached a 1-bit level of compression, 0101, 0101. Make a zip file of everything that your wife tells you about what the future, not being sure, and put it in a dumpster, the dumpster of forgetting, the put it somewhere where you won't even care about it. It doesn't matter what she says. She uses language because she's begging for attention from you. Give her the attention and give her the begging. Play the game. Play the game of reproduction. It sucks that we have to do it because it's not in our sense at all to be using language manipulatively. We use language informatively. We actually believe that language is used for communication of facts about the world. Absolute insanity. Language is a tool of manipulation, and she's using it on you. Play the game because it's low cost. Yeah, be like, "Oh my God, well, I am shocked that you are uncertain, and if I can do anything to convince you that I'm worth it, and that, because now you're kind of questioning my masculinity and my worth as a male who wants to reproduce with you. And so if I can do anything to make you feel confident in the next pregnancy, if I can make it more comfortable for you, because I think you're a very special being who should be reproduced, and this is what I want to do with you. That's all she wants to hear. Shel Byrne says, JF is right, women need lots of attention, and being preggers is not easy. So that's what you do, and then you just have sex with her, and she's gonna let herself, a woman will get herself convinced, two or three babies extra on what, when she starts saying I'm uncertain, some amount of male work will convince her down the line at two or three babies more than she would have wanted. So if she started saying it at the first baby, that means you're still in line for up to four babies with her. If she actually didn't want to make further babies with you, she would already have divorced you. So understand the game and play it. Purple Tuna says, JF, how many pull-ups can you do? Pull-ups like, what is that? Push-ups? That's push-ups. So pull-ups is like this. My God, I've not done this for years. But when I was in shape, I could do, when I was young, 50, 60. And then I'm sure that if I was to do it today, I don't know. I don't know. The only question is how much cheating is allowed. Because, you know, you can do a serious abdominal workout, or you can just make it look like you're sitting up. I'm sure I would still be capable of doing 10. I would have to try. I'll try tonight. I'll go in the gym section of the house, and I will bring you an answer eventually. White has sent $101. Thank you, White. And Mama JF is certainly highly happy that you are contributing so much to the show that to this morning I told her, do you want a laptop? I'm buying a laptop for you. And it's thanks to you, among others, White. He says, hey, JF, WHCDP, here. I'm no longer called White. I'm WHCDP. And I was thinking about what you said about KKBD. And I agree. From now on, please call me WHCDP. KKBG. A complete change of attitude. A lot of robo. Hello. Yeah. I don't hear robo. I don't know about you guys. There's always an individual guy who has audio issues, and you guys are ruining the show for it. Make sure that you check on your side. Some other people are now saying it's not robo, but there is some clipping at time. Hello, is that better? Hopefully it's better. You know, it's a tight setting, but it lowers my voice when I do this. Hello. Hello. Yeah. Okay. Hello. Yeah. I think that's good. White is on a complete change of behavior today. He was excited by the silent sounds of the English language, and now he's going full Germanic. Like, I'm kind of worried for you, White. I think I may have radicalized you. I think I may have radicalized you toward the consonant side of the language, and I don't know where that leads. We had other super chats. The super chats are flowing, and I'm missing some. Cloud Warmer is saying, Silver Spider, nature will win. My wife had a supposed complicated and difficult first pregnancy and delivery, but within 2 years, she had completely forgotten the entire experience and wanted another. Just be the unmovable rock she can rely on. Remember, women talked through their thoughts aloud. Absolutely. And so, yes, the other thing, of course, you can reassure her that there are other ways than the hospital for the future. But even if that's not in question, and basically, they have traumatized her, and just let her forget. It is just amazing how much women forget. And so she's going to forget about it, and the memory that she will have of her pregnancy eventually will be her living child. So she will attach to that child, and for her it will not be so much what's happening when the doctor tells me this or that and all these circumstances at the hospital. It will be, oh, a child. I want another one like this. Cloud Warmer says, walk DKKBJ. When are you going to add some vowels to your name? Additional vowels to your name. Oh my god. People, I feel that white is on the precipice between the light force and the dark force. Cloud Warmer says, I like to think that in a parallel universe, JF is one of the radio hosts in Grand Theft Auto, red-pitting gamers all day, every day about TRP and the nature of reality. That would be funny. I've been watching a movie. I've been watching Moon. Moon, a movie called Moon. Spoiler alert, it's about a clone thing on the moon. Basically, there's a company mining the moon, and they have to clone humans. So they took an actual human on planet Earth, they cloned him 1,000 times, and they just rotate between the clones on the moon. The problem is they clone so well that the guy on the moon is convinced that he's the guy that was cloned. So he's like, he's calling his wife, and they show fake images of his wife, and so he really thinks that he's about to leave the moon and after his 3-year contract, and that he's going to return to planet Earth to his wife, but they're lying to him. His wife is already dead. His daughter has already gotten relatively old. She's a teenager now. He thinks she's a baby, and so this clone ends up discovering the whole thing that is being pulled on him, because he meets another clone, he meets another copy of him, and they eventually figure out that planet Earth has just decided to clone them so that they can be good workers, but they kind of have an expiry date, and after 3 years they just become sick and they die. So it's quite interesting. I had never seen this premise elsewhere. I've seen some cloning stories. There's Oxygen also that's in the style. But the idea of a clone worker like this, whose existence is meaningless, who can only the only positive thing about this guy's life is to think, well, there's a copy of me on Earth that is enjoying life, but this guy has basically created me so that I can work on the moon. Maybe he's deriving some income from it. But somehow the guy on planet Earth has consented to his image being and his self being cloned multiple times. Very interesting. One of the clones escapes from the moon. At the end of the 3-year contract, he finds a way to fit himself into the the little vessel that goes back to the Earth. It's well, John Drake says it's a good movie. It's an acceptable movie at this point. It's still a little annoying. It's specific. It's not grandiose. It's like, holy shit, this guy's existence is pretty miserable. But it's okay to watch. Aquanode says, JF, how does a brain like Spirit Man's get made? Were his features actually indicative of schizophrenia? I have never seen a debate where the other participants said absolutely nothing over 3 hours, despite producing many words. It is amazing. This kind of brain is a dissociative brain that has separated from the physical universe. And is it schizophrenia? The thing is, there's a parallel to schizophrenia. That's why I was calling him schizo. The thing is, it is exactly what schizophrenia does. But schizophrenia is in the domain of social thinking. So, oh my God, what is this person thinking about me? But schizophrenia has this packaging your existence into a parallel universe aspect to it. The universe imagined in your head. And this guy has the same thing, except that his parallel universe is the ideological world. So he's an idealist. The problem with these people is that they are so inside this logical idealist world that they have forgotten that reality has prior existence to it. And this has been totally resolved by French philosophers in the domain of existentialism. when someone said, I don't remember, maybe it was Jean-Paul Sartre or someone along those lines, who said, existence precedes essence. And this is so important. Existence precedes essence. That is the realization that the ideas, the ontology, does not pre-exist what it describes. Because all these people, Jay Dyer, Spirit Man, they all think that ontology and just the world of ideas precedes existence. It's the other way around. You have to exist to think about an idea. You have to exist in a very special way, because if rocks only existed, there wouldn't be IDs. So to reach IDs, you need a whole evolutionary history that leads you to have a complex brain that can abstract its observations of the world, and eventually some subset of species end up attaining IDs, which in the language of the existentialist was essence. When we were talking about essence in that philosophical domain, we're talking about the definition of things, the logical constructs that you can superimpose on reality. The essence of a table is that it's a flat surface that can allow people to eat on it. The essence of a chair is that it's a surface that is sustained, elevated, and that allows people sitting on it. So that's essence, and essence also will contain, for this context, any form of mathematics and logics that, by the presuppositionalist standard, are supposed to be presupposed before you do observations in the world. But before you could have any of these ideas, before you could construct the idea of a chair in your head, you had to have an head first. So the world of ideas is not disjunct and separate from the physical universe. It supervenes on it. That is the great discovery of existence precede essence, and it is so important. DK Shadow has another expression that is totally parallel to this. He says, the map is not the territory. Yes. Although the statement of the existentialist philosophers is even further. It's to say, what could be the parallel with the map is not the territory. The territory comes before the map. That's what they would say. John Drake says, the guy was totally disrespectful. He came to the debate without reading TRP, 140 pages, a total clown. Absolutely. TRP, easy to read, puts you up to date on the current state of thinking in terms of the emergence of life and the dangers of genetic editing. Why would anyone not want to read this? Silver Spider says, I remember Molyneux versus Dyer. Molyneux says there's no number 7 floating around in space, and Dyer said basically there was. Yes, quite funny. Mama JF is here. What's up, Mama JF?
Hey, even me too, I agree with you, JF. I don't think there's a world of ideal without our brain. I really agree with you.
That is great.
Even the Bible said agree with you.
The Bible agrees with me?
Yes, the Bible said, what is gained on earth is gained in heaven, and what is lost on earth is lost in heaven.
Ah, very interesting. So they would have framed already this kind of development of the world matters.
Yes.
Very interesting. I didn't know this at all.
It's funny.
That would be a difference, right, with some other religions, if you think about it. I don't know. Maybe I don't know enough about the Muslim religion, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's this promise of wonderful life in heaven, where basically what you do on earth doesn't matter all that much to it. Yes, very interesting. I never thought, but maybe Christianity was a predisposition to get to existentialist philosopher. Interesting to consider. All right, Aquanaut is saying, John Drake, the worst part was his complete resistance to reading TRP after JF laid out why he should read it over a 3-hour debate. Imagine being so intellectually non-curious you don't read something communicated to you in a debate with the author in front of you. Yes, and it's like, it's directly related to your project. It tells you exactly what will happen and why it's wrong. It's a book about why you shouldn't modify people genetically. And, it's too much in the particular. And he assumed all sorts of things about the book. It was like, oh, I'm sure JF does a good description of the methodology of CRISPR. Like, no, I don't. There's not even a single time I talk about the word CRISPR in this. It's not a methodological book. It's like, holy shit. Little times in life have I been as frustrated as having written an intellectual treatise and having it reduced to a methodological treatise by someone who has no fucking clue, who hasn't read the first page of this book. This hurts. It hurts because it's the unreachability of the human mind that was standing right in front of me. The fucking stupidity of people. It's like, this guy assumes, JF is a scientist, so he certainly has done some technical writing on this. No, it's not a technical writing. The world is so disappointing that people now expect disappointment before getting to it. Samurai is in the waiting room. Let's see if we can talk to him. Hello, Samurai.
Hello, JF. How are you doing today?
Doing great.
All right. Good to hear, man. You probably don't remember. I was on the show some months ago. We had a nice chat, although you made fun of my voice, and I just couldn't get over the harassment I was receiving from your fans. So I just had to come back and settle the score.
Your voice sounds good tonight.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad. I had a bit of a cold last time, but also this was a few months ago.
Describe your voice as gay?
Yeah, that's exactly what you said.
Because you don't sound gay tonight.
Oh, thanks so much. Actually, I converted. So, yeah, I had some electrodes put in my brain. I was zapped a little bit. I ended up converting. So it's all thanks to you, my friend. Thank you very much.
more heterosexuality in the world, thanks to me. The heterosexual white man wins again.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, well, speaking of
heterosexuality... No, but seriously, do you have a different microphone or something? Or is it cuff ready?
Same microphone.
Yeah. That's fascinating. All right. What did you want to talk about tonight?
Well, yeah, I had... actually, I recently watched your debate with Brenton over on Modern Day Debate, and I thought it was pretty funny. Modern Day Debate is a channel that I like quite a bit, and I've actually been on it in the past. Although maybe that's something we can talk about it a little bit. I'm not
what
really
did you debate?
Oh man, that it's a whole story. Like, we can talk about it if you think it'd be interesting, but it's honestly this whole long thing, and it's not
yeah,
too
but
fun to discuss.
What was the theme of the debate? You could tell us this.
It was an abortion debate. So I was initially meant to help James just do the camera work and editing for it.
Ah.
And I ended up doing all of that, but actually the day of, he called me up. He's like, Sommer, one of our panelists dropped out. You know, I'd really like it if you could jump on the panel on the pro-choice side. So I'm like, you know, whatever, just to save the event. I just like went up there. I made like 1 point the entire thing. It was like kind of embarrassing, but whatever. So it was kind of funny. But actually, it got me
James
thinking.
James has a tough job because organizing debate is quite the job. And you're always surprised and you have to keep the show going. And there are very few people like me who just accept anything from him. And it's like, whatever time, I will be there.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. So, yeah, you sound more of a flexible debater. Man, I have trouble, like, getting my friends together once a week. So I can only imagine what James has to do, especially, like, with the big event he's putting on next week, I think, or 2 weeks from
now. Yeah, he's making an IRL event.
Yeah, he is. He's doing an IRL event in Texas, actually. So that'll be in 2 weeks or so, I believe.
But, Texas has this whole active internet debating scene. It's not the first time that Texas is where people head for atheist debate of some kind, secularist type of thing. There's a little community there.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know. Well, actually... That's kind of what I was curious about today. You know, I don't want to stoke your ego too much, but, you know, I'd say you're a pretty fantastic debater. I was just curious about, like, how you acquired your debate skills and how did, like, was it something that came naturally to you? I know you were in academia for a long time. Did that kind of develop your skills? How did that go?
Well, I would say academia doesn't develop that kind of skill. Do you know my history with blood sports?
Not so much, no.
So basically there's three components of my life that have contributed to my understanding of debates. First, my fascination with French TV, and especially scenes that we call in French TV clashes. So when there is a clashes in an intellectual show on French TV, it was always great to me. You have an author, you have someone who hates the author. They put them together on the studio stage and they go at each other for hours. That is my first contact, consuming a lot of TV, consuming a lot of journalism also with controversial figures. To me, that was always very fascinating. Then the blood sports era. Was an era of the internet in which I was hosting a show where people were debating. And so as the co-host, I had an analytical role. So I think that's what people loved of the blood sports era. It's that it was just not two people debating the thing, but I was kind of taking the audience by the hand and saying, oh, here's debater one has said this, and this means that debater two must address this point. So I was creating an analytical structure that was helping give landmarks to people who listen. And that is something that, unfortunately, debaters don't have the talent to do it on their own speech. But I do it on my own speech. Like, I lay out, okay, this is this part of the argument. this is my degree of certainty with it. And, you know, sometimes I'll have an argument with many components and I will isolate those components and I will explicitly state them. So that is something I developed because I like the analysis and because in Blood Sports it was particularly... because you can have people yelling at each other and it goes so fast. Most people don't necessarily have the brains to analyze all of this in real time. But I have it. So I was kind of supporting, okay, here's a fallacy that was committed. What does this other guy now have to say now that this has been properly identified as a fallacy? That kind of stuff is really enriching debates, and I find it too bad. Too bad that the current debate scene, including modern day debate and the Crucible, although they're making a wonderful job, they are not bringing it to the analytical level. They are staying neutral moderators, and basically they are absent moderators, which is they are moderating only for speech, turn, and that kind of stuff. I was moderating for we want a winner. We want to get to the truth. That was a different style that I've put forward in Blood Sports, and too bad it didn't survive because all the debate channels today have opted for fully neutral involvement of the co-host, which I understand is also a way that you keep your clientele, because if you're not a neutral debater, then you take sides and then people end up hating you and people end up not wanting to be on your show. But what was magical about the Blood Sports era was that we were so popular, we were so big, that there was not saying no to Warski Live. If Warski Live invited you, you were coming. Doesn't matter that you're going to get hammered by JF and by the other debater on top of it. You were just showing up because it was the only way to grow your channel. So that's what happened with Blood Sports. A third component of my debate skills is consuming a lot of debate and also doing stream analysis. So, you know, the discussion between Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris. In my early streaming career, I had very little viewers, but I did a 7-hour stream analyzing each word. Here's what Jordan Peterson got wrong here. Here's what he gets right. Here's where you could grant him okay, but ultimately his definition of truth doesn't work. So to me, the public record is something that should be analyzed in full. And I had these super analytical streams that I've inherited also a mode of debating from them. That is some of the things that make my personality in debating. I would add also, beyond the intellectual stuff that create the structure of my arguments, because this whole style of debating that I have is born from the Warski Live era, where I was working at a grocery store placing milk, and I was rising as a celebrity on the internet, and all day long I was just placing milk in the alley and thinking about the structure of my argument. And one thing I do that I think most debaters fail to do fully is to have distillated, bare-bones arguments. Like, the argument is almost ridiculous how obvious it is. Like I will make arguments that people wouldn't think you can talk about 1 hour on it, but I can. And I strip my arguments of all facts, and I consider its logical structure. Consider if you didn't know that 17% of teenagers consume marijuana or whatever. If you disagree with all facts, there must be something left. And that something is my barebone argument. And I was spending my days just thinking about what my barebone will be. Once you have the barebone, the rest is just sprinkling. And I do a lot of sprinkling in my debates. And I do a lot of sprinkling that is in the form of bravado, red herring, and just spectacular statements, things that only JF could say. like when I started against Spirit Man yesterday, was it yesterday or 2 days ago? I said, I'm the only person in this debate that stands for heterosexuality. And it's like, these things are things you will never hear from anyone else. I drop these things as red herrings, kind of. I want not to misguide people away from my argument, but I want to tempt them with something that seems more fat than my bare bone arguments, and then bring them back to the bare bone. I do a lot of this. So there you go. You got my recipe.
That's good. That's good. I'll have to try and follow it a little bit. I'll have to try and emulate it a bit. It's interesting what you said about the analytical live streams that you do, which is how you pick up a lot of tactics or do's and don'ts. I'll have to go check some of those out because, I'm also a little bit nerdy about this kind of stuff. And I can see myself sitting there for 7 hours, saying, oh yeah, Jordan Peterson, he did use and in that way. Pretty crazy. Yeah. But I feel like it's a little hard. I feel like, especially for maybe people who are kind of really immersed, and I'm maybe going out on a limb here, but I feel like yourself and probably a lot of your audience are kind of immersed in that internet sort of debate culture, at least to an extent, that you kind of you forget a little bit about what it's like to just debate or even just talk about ideas with ordinary people, like, for example, maybe to illustrate what I mean is that Brenton, for example, I mean, I gotta give him some credit. He's a pretty smart guy. He knows some stuff. He could probably out debate, 99% of people out there. He could definitely out debate me in some ways. And I feel like when you get so immersed in this world of the online debate and like these complicated tactics, do you feel like you maybe lose a bit of efficacy when you're just talking to maybe an average Joe off the street, so to speak?
Well, I approach any discussion with an average Joe very differently. So it's a different world to me. There's no contamination because when I'm interacting with a Brenton, I know that I'm faced with an absolute obfuscation. I'm faced with someone who's actively trying to jam signals, someone who's trying to blur, trying to undefine. He's trying to basically destroy the work that I'm trying to build. And so that's why against a Brenton, simplicity is the key. And against most debaters, simplicity is the key. Because people who listen to you, if you say a very complex case that requires some special words, predefinitions, assumptions about certain authors being right, eventually you lose them. But if you can stick to a bare bone against a Brenton and he doesn't succeed at putting the doubt in people's mind that you may be wrong, and your bare bone seems so obvious that people are like, no, I can't question this, JF is right. That's what they retain in their head. That is what most people retain, so much so that it became a meme in 2017. JF is technically right. That became a meme in 2017 on 4chan because people were listening to my stuff and they were like, holy shit, he's right. It has to be true. And that's what the impression that I want to leave in people's head. Whereas if I engage with someone on the street, first, I don't engage with people on the street. I don't engage with friends because most of my relationships are family in nature, and I'm not going to bring up any controversial subjects. I want them to feel the human being JF, but I'm not there to shock them or to convince them of anything. In fact, I'm extremely hard to get on a political conversation with anyone in my friends or family because I don't want trouble. I don't want them to feel uncomfortable, and it takes really forcing me to go down that route. But I don't think that talking to a random person to try to actually convince them, I rarely do it. Perhaps on the internet, sometimes someone will DM me and I will take them by the hand. But then it's the same thing. It's just that when you are with someone who's obviously open to your argument, you can be less careful about sticking to your bare bones, and you can advance a couple of facts, test them, and say, okay, do you believe this? Do you believe this? Do you think I'm right on this? And that you won't do in a debate against a Brenton or a Spirit Man, because any kind of olive branch that you try to give them, they will exploit it against you. So you'd rather just go autistic and ignore them. And that's also one of my strategies in debate. A lot of people don't do this very well. Learn to ignore the bad points of your opponent. You have to have a good feeling of what's the audience level, but there is a lot of things that do not need to be explicitly defended. And you elevate yourself in the brain of the audience by not even engaging with it. So that their brain is like, oh, it feels good when JF is speaking because he's not talking about this crappy subject that this other guy keeps bringing back. And so let the other side dig their own grave. That is what I do a lot.
Okay, that's a cool pearl of wisdom. It's interesting. You know, I kind of feel the opposite with what you said regarding like friends and family. It'll take a real push for you to get into them because you don't really want to kind of go down that road. I can relate to that a bit, but actually, maybe it's because you kind of have this platform. This is maybe your outlet for getting that sort of urge, that autistic urge to, you know, talk about all these ideas and stuff, and you can get it out that way. For me, it makes me kind of want to seek out friends who are more open to different ideas. And I feel like, especially recently, that that's what I've been doing is I've been like I'll have friends who like I know I can just talk about like any crazy idea, any crazy non-PC idea with, and they'll kind of roll with it and try to grasp it as much. So do you not feel that urge so much in your personal life?
I don't at all, because well, first I get plenty of it. It's my job. I talk of my opinions 1 hour, 1 hour and a half a day, plus sometimes a debate on top of it. I really don't need an outlet. And, you know, the function of people in your life is reproduction, kids enjoying each other, playing, learning. There's no reason to engage on hot political subjects. I keep this for the internet. Now, I think you're younger than me. Perhaps I was more, you know, just like you, looking for a network when I was younger and trying to prove myself to the people around me. But at this point, I've done so much on the internet. There's nothing I can possibly say to my uncle that would mean anything to me. I could convince him on 1,000 subject or on 0 subject. It won't change anything. He's going to still be my uncle. And, you know, if I was to find someone in my circles that actually enjoys this debate, performance, technical aspect, I could give him the JF experience. I could start debating him, but I'm never going to do this without kind of explicit consent, because it's like, this is rough. This is a rough world. It's not a way to treat your uncle, and it's not a way to treat your mother, you know?
Oh, yeah, I guess that's kind of true. And like you said, you kind of already have your outlet for getting some of these ideas out. So that's fair enough. What about in your work? Do you think, or let's say, you know, last time we talked, you may not remember, but you gave a pretty, what's a polite word, a pretty scathing account of your PhD experience. You know, I was just kind of, that kind of made me curious, because it feels like it feels like you probably are saying like, yeah, I do have this urge, but not in my personal life because I've built a career around it. Didn't you feel that intellectual satisfaction, at least a little bit, in kind of the same way when you were immersed in academia, or not so much? Were you feeling like totally unsatisfied with that specific aspect?
I was unsatisfied with the possibility of advancing any form of knowledge creatively in academia, because you get to publish a paper once a year, maybe, and you get some parallel projects, so maybe a good year you'll get 2 or 3 papers out at the same time, but it's such a long time, and these papers, most of the time, they will not have something like the revolutionary phenotype. It's not going to be a massive theory that just undoes and looks at things in reverse compared to the current paradigm. It's all going to be in line with the paradigm, and you're already funded by the government, so you asked permission for this scientific experiment to the government. They approved you. And so at this point, it's not even your work. It's a molded work by a bunch of bureaucrats. And basically, when you design your own experiment in academia, you fit it to what you think the bureaucrat wants and what you think the university wants and what you think the thesis director wants. And so it's not so much, it's not a place where you can do revolutionary stuff. So I was totally unsatisfied. There is one thing in academia that I'm still respectful of. I was surrounded by very high IQ people. It's amazing in a good lab, in a good university, how this ends up selecting very, very high intelligence people. And so to be on an everyday basis hanging out with monkeys and 140 IQs, like five people around you with 140 IQ, I don't think I'll ever see this again in my life. How can you gather 140 IQs in a single room, six of them? The university still does this relatively well through selection and just people getting selected on their grades, and they end up, of course, they're intelligent at the end.
Yeah, that yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I could, that sounds very satisfying. That sounds very refreshing, I gotta say. So
now the academics, they are intelligent, but they are also conservative thinkers. They are very liberal, you know, so the discussion would often degrade toward what you would expect is the liberal thought. Now, you mentioned you wanted to go check in my past for stream and debate analysis. I think that historically, one of my most fascinating analysis of any debate was in the Warsky Live era, and they still have the video on the internet. It's called Debate Tactics, the Stealth Moral Tie, Vegan Gains Debate, where I describe how I owned Vegan Gains in an argument that I did for meat eating. And I call this the stealth moral tie, where I hide my original intention, which is to just say, oh, well, meat eating is at least just as good as veganism. And that's the ending of my strategy, but I hide it and I take the other debater through various oops to fool him about what's my real argument. If you want to watch this video, it will be in the list of the HTML file below the Odyssey video. You can find the link to the alt-censored website where they still host this 4-hour, 50 minutes analysis of my debate performance.
Okay. I'll be sure to give that a check out. And you know, what you were saying about simplicity reminded me of something that was happening a few days ago. In fact, I think one of my friends, we like kind of sending each other debates to watch. And I think it was one of your debates, actually. You debated some guy on like race and crime or something. And my friend gave back like a very... Like, I teased him a lot for it. I'm like, wow, what a soy-pilled analysis. And basically, all he ended up saying was, well, JF kind of, he said, oh, well, JF said institutional racism was not real, and I disagree. I'm like, okay, why do you disagree? And he's like, well, you know, the culture, for example, of whichever community, the culture of whichever community conflicts with the dominant culture of the police. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, you can pretty much make that argument for every lawbreaker ever. Yeah. Pretty much their cultural values might conflict with the law, which is sort of the basis that we hold for cultural values. And I'm like, and he's like, yeah, that's all I'm arguing. And I'm like, well, I guess that's a pretty simplistic point. And I kind of clowned on him for it. Like, I'm like, that's so dumb. You're not really saying anything. But, you know, maybe there was some wisdom to that, because I did have to concede his point in the end. So, you know, maybe you have a point about the simplicity aspect of it. I'll have to think about it some, because I definitely have the tendency to like really want to sort of get in the web and like sort of disentangle everything without keeping in mind what's simple. So maybe it's a young man's mistake, or But I'll have to think oh, about yeah. it a bit.
Young leftists, it's amazing. I mean, they will make you a whole speech about co-ops and communism and the rights of worker. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. In a JF speech, in a JF intro, I will not even use a word like rights or workers without properly defining it. It's like, here's what I'm talking about. But if you go on a super long text that you've pre-written and you want to say all these things, you want to pack all these ideas into the audience, you're going to pack nothing. So that's something to be careful with. You were saying that you conceded to his stuff. Yeah, another tip for debate is you have to be careful not to concede what you think is ground that you don't need, but you need it, or concede ground that your opponent will benefit from to advance onto you. So sometimes you may have the impression that you're just conceding a semantic thing, but you have to be super careful because it's not so far that you concede the semantic, you concede the morals. Things, for example, around racism. If the leftist is able to slip into his speech or slip even into an admission of yours that somehow racism is this very complex thing with very complex ways, and it's not just discrimination, it's maybe discrimination plus power, and it's not just obvious observable acts of racism, it is a way of being of a system, you've lost a lot of ground already if you let them do this without properly debunking them and saying, wait a minute, this definition is so loose as to include things that are not racist. And even if you concede their use of the word racist, you're kind of implicitly letting them tread into, well, so you admit that racism is bad. You know, I tend to not concede any of this. And to anyone who says, well, JF, don't you think racism is bad? I'd be like, well, what are we talking about? What is racism here? If I like to have an Asian girlfriend, is that racist against whites? Is that racist against Africans? If I find Asians cute, and you can slowly undermine even the definition of something that like 99.9% of the people will tell you racism is bad, but you can lead them to question themselves. Well, racism as it is currently used by the left includes basically you not wanting to go out with a girlfriend that has a dick. I mean, well, that's sexism, you know?
Excuse me, sir. I don't really approve of this kind of hate, okay? I don't really approve of this kind of hate on my platform. Not cool. You know, it's fascinating that you brought up the... And honestly, I feel like I have a bit of unlearning to do because when you say this, I can like recognize it intellectually, but especially I went to like a pretty inner city high school, and they would bring in like these lecturers. And the thing is, you were talking about having the bare bones ideas and building your arguments. And in the context of this discussion, they bring in like these lecturers, especially in our English class, who are like these super progressive, like PhD. One of my teachers, here's a fun fact for you. One of my teachers has a PhD in critical whiteness studies. I didn't even know that was something that existed, but apparently it was. And I'm like, man, how much money did you spend just to read like, you know, racist worker manuals from the 30s? Yeah. And but the thing is, the fact that racism is like this sort of complex web where everybody, even just by virtue of existing, contributes to it, that was sort of the baseline. That was the, you know, that was the bare bones argument that you would base it off of. I didn't know how to challenge this in high school. I just kind of had this instinctive feeling that like maybe this doesn't line up with my experience. Am I being kind of anti-intellectual? I guess, yeah. I kind of was, but you know, it's hard. I guess it's hard to go back and unlearn some of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. And it's this self-doubt that you describe is so self-destructive, and it's omnipresent. Everyone feels it. It's like they are in a course that tells them white people are evil, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, am I crazy? Am I Have I been raised backward by backward parents? And it's but there's something bizarre in this speech, and they are pressured socially into rejecting their own idea that there is something bizarre in this speech, and that's how the left convinces. They basically pressure through the mob and through self guilt and cultivating that guilt. But what I've been wanting to give to people through my public life is I'm gonna stand and do the argument that everyone thinks in their head, but they don't want to do it. I want to liberate this oppression that you just described, where someone knows that what the left is trying to teach them is abusive and ridiculous, but yet they won't say it and they will question themselves silently.
Yeah. Well, that's good, man. Well, I hope you keep doing debates for a really long time to come. I really enjoyed listening to them. When you said we should push for heterosexuality in that debate with Brenton and he spurged out about it, I found it pretty funny.
This is exactly what I do. That's a red herring, and it's just to get the other side pissed. And it's like, no one in the audience would be offended at the idea. Yeah, you know, heterosexuality is nice. Most of the people listening will be heterosexual. And so it's something that I know will only piss the debater, but will not lose me a single audience member.
Yeah, exactly. Well, cool, man. Hey, listen, I've taken up enough of your time. So all right. I'll go ahead and head out. But hopefully I'll be able to hop on another one of these soon. But thanks for chatting with me. I appreciate it. Thanks for the tips as well. I'll definitely try to incorporate some of these into just discussions that I'm having. And thanks to the audience for listening. I hope I wasn't too boring for you guys.
Absolutely. And your homework is to go watch my video, Debate Tactics, The Stealth Moral Tie. It will be in the description below in the links, HTML file that I do after each show. Bye-bye, Samurai.
As you wish, Professor. Have a good rest of your night.
Oh, no, now he sounds gay again. As you wish, Professor. Holy shit. I remember these women who would want me to... They would be like, JF, I want you to act like a professor while you fuck me. Holy shit, these girls were bizarre. I mean, it's like... Yeah, I can do this. Okay. It's time for you to learn a lesson, you little brat. This is candidate for lieutenant governor of Arkansas. She pushed for forced masks for kids. She claimed letting kids not mask causes trauma.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm... Stress.
Something I keep hearing from parents who do not want their children wearing masks in school is that they think it is causing slash will cause long-term mental health issues. This is really bothering me, and here's why. Let me preface this with I am not a trauma professional, but as a former foster parent, I took a lot of interest in how trauma impacts kids.
Whenever a woman says the word trauma, doesn't matter if she's talking about, I want to protect kids from trauma. I have trauma. I have experienced trauma in my life. Trauma is a red flag. When they are so fascinated about trauma that they're like, I have this whole strategy to raise a child and it's based around trauma, it's like, this is weird. Those are some of the most abusive women you can find. Because they are so obsessed about trauma that they end up justifying their current abuse of the child. Because I know so much about trauma that, you know, I have the right educational strategy. Silver Spider says, JF accidentally pushed the hetero so much, he went around full circle to gayness. I was just kidding. I really enjoyed talking to Samurai.
And I've spent a lot of time reading and studying about it. Most people would argue that living through a pandemic is in fact traumatic. Everything is different. And I get that people are grasping at normal.
The only trauma that has been caused by you guys just going crazy about this pandemic. We could have gone business as usual. Grandma died. Sorry. and life goes on, but you guys decided to make it a social case. There is a pandemic. We are in the middle of a pandemic. The middle never ends. In fact, if we're talking about the middle of a pandemic, we're as much in the middle of a pandemic as we were a year ago. We're in the middle of it.
Normal, because that makes it feel less traumatic. But here's the thing about trauma. Being able to move and do something to protect yourself is a critical factor in determining whether or not a horrible experience...
Oh, so you're going to deceive all these children. You're going to not only allow them to protect themselves, you're going to force the masks on them. And you're deceiving them because it's not even working. It doesn't stop the pandemic. And you're going to tell me, well, it's still good because it gives them an option of action. It gives them the impression that they can protect themselves from the virus. And here you have the whole circle of abuse that is made by these psychologically oriented trauma specialists. It's like, oh, I don't want you to be traumatized by the pandemic, which I created the whole social context in which this would traumatize you anyway. But I don't want you to be traumatized by this, so I have to give you an out. I have to give you a solution. Oh, well, the masks don't stop the pandemic, but at least they have the psychological effect of giving you the impression that you can solve the pandemic. The whole circle of abuse is there. Lie at the beginning, lie on the method to solve. You've created a problem and you've created a solution, and both of them are false. Both of them is absolute bullshit. Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, the people are not going home anytime soon. The supporters of Bolsonaro are still on the streets. Okay, so lots of activity in Brazil with the disagreement around the election. A shooting has occurred. We have the video of the shooting in Toronto, Canada. A shooting between what seems to be teenagers at some high school. Teen fatally shot outside Toronto High School. Let's see how it happened.
Are you out of the parking lot? What?
Oh, shit. Yo, 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 yo.
So it's not really clear on the video, but it seems to be between these two guys. This guy seems to be the one having the gun. This one is advancing constantly toward this guy, and eventually he will pull the gun and shoot him. You see, he's taunting him and backing up.
Oh shit. Yo, 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 yo.
So still he's advancing, advancing, advancing. The other guy that has the gun is backing off.
Yo!
So that's the guy backing off. That's the guy advancing.
Why is he backing away though? Yo, this nigga got a... Oh shit! Oh shit!
This little lady was not prepared for an actual shooting, and she just saw it.
Oh shit! Oh shit! Oh shit! Oh shit!
Yeah, it's very hard to determine what is the race of the people involved. There's some comment about the guy having a gun and being black by this person who was filming. But I don't know. I don't know. The video is not good enough for me to extract this information. In any case, this is the state of high schools in Canada right now. So, I mean, everything is bad about this. The fact that the guy had a gun, but the other guy is also looking for trouble by advancing on him. It does seem that he had flashed his gun. So the guy that was advancing was looking for trouble, knowing that he was faced with a deadly threat. He probably thought it was a bluff or something. It's extremely sad, and the whole the person just filming this and enjoying it, kind of being excited about this. This tells me that the public school is not a healthy place to send your children. Ariel Suarez says, "Can whoever has the gun please stop that screaming, irritating?" Yeah, the person who was filming was irritating. It's like, if Papa JF had a cell phone in any event that is of news interest, Papa JF would be silent. I would be following the event with, like, absorption, suspension of my cell phone so that you guys don't see the image shake at all. Like chicken, you know how you can take a chicken in your hand and you move the body of the chicken, but the head always stays in place. The chicken is like, oh yeah, I don't mind if you move me. My head is staying immobile. I would be like this, because it's like, I respect the audio stream. I respect the audience and I respect the information. When you film something, your bitchy commentary, we don't give a shit. So please stop screaming. DK Shadow says, false. JF will be cursing in French instinctually. Can you imagine? I mean, for you guys who know me, I'm not an emotional guy. Like, I can't imagine a situation in which I'm like, oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Ah! There's nothing that gets me as excited as she was. Elon Musk is putting the ADL in charge of Twitter moderation. Catherine was saying, I admit when I'm wrong, and I was 100% wrong about Elon Musk changing Twitter. The new Twitter Moderation Council is just a bunch of far-left fanatic groups who were never targeted here. No average Joes. No real conservatives, no one to represent the people actually targeted. Yes, that is the first thing that you need to include in the council. It's not even included. It has to be the majority. This council will harass people. It will oppress free speech. So what you need is the people who would be oppressed by this council to be in the council, so that it doesn't do this. Elon Musk has to understand that the whole hate business is not hate resulting in the harassment of minorities. The whole hate speech business on the internet is people using crimes as an excuse to censor speech. They're the ones who have the burden of proof, because they're the ones saying, oh yeah, when JF criticizes Israel, some random guy in the city of New York gets harassed because he has a Jewish hat. They are the ones who want to take the criminality that already happens and would happen anyway, no matter what I say, and they want to oppress my speech with it. Cloud Warmer says, treat me like a professor, JF. Okay, proceeds to not respond to emails, provides vague answers, yawns during lectures, and holds general contempt for their first-year student. That is funny. Holy shit. Jordan Peterson is in Israel with Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro and Jordan Peterson met in Israel to sit down with Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for an in-depth conversation on politics, Ukraine, and Russia. Holy shit. This banning of Jordan Peterson has radicalized him. I think he's... Since the Daily Wire is his only outlet, he's become absolutely, you know, in line with what we knew he was in line with, but absolutely in line with Israeli interests. It's what it is. We have to live with this. Dr. Fauci will be deposed on November 23rd for the case that's about censorship and whether the government was coordinating an email with the social media company the Fed has made a super rate increase, raised interest rates for the sixth time, another massive increase, though originally Bitcoin responded positively because people were thinking, okay, well, it's so radical of a raise that it must be the last one, there's going to be a pause. But eventually Powell came out later in the day and said, no, there's no plan for a pause, we're going to keep going. And so Bitcoin dropped back down. In any case, Bitcoin is on a solid trajectory. It's been very stable. It's been very flat. It's to be expected between two bull runs. Twitter's C-suit clears out as Musk cements power over the company. There were several people like Sarah Personette who have announced that they are resigning. They have resigned. They were maybe not happy with the arrival of Elon Musk, or perhaps Elon Musk told them, if you don't resign, I will fire you. I don't know. But a lot of people have documented, I'm resigning from Twitter. What else do we have? Elon Musk, 5 major moves in first week of Twitter censorship. Dissolving the Twitter board, firing top executives, the Vijay Gadai and these people, bringing in Tesla engineers to review Twitter's code, launching Content Moderation Council. That is the most important, and everything will hinge on this. The rest, who cares? $8, $20, Twitter Blue, not Twitter Blue, all of this is details. The question is, will there be free speech on Twitter? And will there be a way for the people like me who were banned to come back? That is the only thing that matters. The rest is all details. AOC hits Elon Musk's possible Twitter verification charge. Fox News was also covering that conversation. $20 a month to keep my blue check? Fuck that. They should pay me. If that gets instituted, I'm gone like Enron. That was the tweet of Stephen King. And then AOC AOC was saying this, laughing my ass off at the billionaire earnestly trying to get $8 from us. All right. David DePape seems to be admitting his intent. He said it was the end of the road for Paul Pelosi, take them all out. DePape allegedly asked Paul Pelosi if Nancy Pelosi is number 2 in line for the presidency. Court documents filed Tuesday paint a clearer picture of what happened when DePape allegedly broke into the residence, stating that Paul Pelosi was knocked unconscious by the suspect and woke up in a pool of his own blood. The documents state that Paul Pelosi was knocked unconscious for about 3 minutes. And according to the documents, DePape had several targets. he would have said to Paul Pelosi, okay, well, I'm going to tie you up. DePape said to Paul Pelosi, according to the document, which also state that the suspect threatened to tie up Mr. Pelosi about 10 times. When Paul Pelosi attempted to escape through an elevator near the bedroom, DePape held the door to prevent him from leaving. Nancy Pelosi's husband then sat on the bed and asked DePape why he wanted to see the House speakers. Well, she's number 2 in line for the presidency, right? DePape said. After Paul Pelosi agreed, DePape said that they're all corrupt and we've got to take them all out. Okay, so it's not a direct admission by DePape, but it seems to be the narrative of Paul Pelosi. I'd like to hear DePape. I'd like to have video of him saying, hey, what were you doing there? Maybe we won't get this because he has the right to remain silent. Russia says top priority is to avoid nuclear clash, reiterates poorly defensive views. Well, good news. We don't want Russia to be escalating the already escalated and already warmongering America, White House has finally deleted their tweet. There was a tweet that was saying from the White House, seniors are getting the biggest increase in their social security checks in 10 years through President Biden's leadership. And it was maybe some trolling by Elon Musk. I don't know to what extent. Or maybe it was already a rolled out feature of Twitter that just happened to activate itself just at the right moment. But there was basically a fact check, a readers added context kind of message under a Joe Biden tweet. The kind of thing you would expect under every single Trump tweet. But since Elon Musk took over Twitter, it ended up being under a Biden tweet. And I found this hilarious that you would fact check the Democrats. But the White House ended up deleting the tweet, shamed by the fact that they were fact checked. The fact checked was saying seniors will receive a large security benefit increase due to the annual cost of living adjustment, which is based on the inflation rate. Ah, okay, that was the catch. So the White House was saying, this is the biggest check we've ever given to old people. And of course, it's the biggest check because you made life unaffordable. And these checks are tied to inflation. Their purchasing power hasn't improved. You are giving a higher check because you're forced to, because you've messed up the economy. Well, that is some important context right there. Purple Tuna says, Jeff, what do your senses tell you? Will DePape die in jail before trial begins? I'm not into the conspiratorial belief that people get killed when they are about to reveal stuff about the elites of this world. I think it's funny to think of as a possibility, but I don't think it should be taken seriously as something that's likely to happen. No, even Jeff Epstein. I do not believe that Jeff Epstein was killed by a Hillary Clinton agent. I believe that perhaps there was a lack of motivation at stopping him from committing suicide. Perhaps there was a lack of talent by the police guards, and perhaps they have done a poor job. And perhaps this poor job was even commended to some extent. Perhaps they got pressured into doing a poor job. But I tend to think that Jeff Epstein killed himself. I tend to think that this guy could commit suicide. I tend to think that this guy was so in the hedonistic lifestyle that for him, the idea of being jailed forever was insupportable. He couldn't deal with it. And I think he may have killed himself. Silver Spider says, Jeff, okay, but did you see how short his bed was? I usually don't believe this stuff, but it was pretty shady. I saw it, and the fact is there is a possibility for hanging on your knees. And someone of the IQ and biological knowledge of Jeff Epstein, you know, no matter how much people disrespect him, this guy had a higher IQ than the average person. He probably understood enough about how to compress the artery of his neck that he could find a position while kneeled that would allow him to cause a strangulation by falling forward. It's not a 100% success type of strangulation, but it seems that in his case he succeeded at committing suicide with it. Anyways, that is it for tonight, boys. I will go relax and wait for Mama JF's laptop. I had it delivered. I think it might come within 2 days. So I'll be just sitting in my home, looking at the window, looking at seeing if the delivery man shows up. Can't wait to see that laptop. Much love, everyone. And that is it for tonight. If you would like to support the show on a monthly basis, join the Subscribestar. It's the right time. I'm going to soon be setting up the date. I'm not going to set it up tonight, but if you are on the Subscribestar or the Patreon, send me a DM if you have preferences, because I always have difficulty knowing when it is that people work, when it is that they prefer having the hangout. Should we do Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday? Last time I tried Saturday, it didn't work well. A lot of people were busy. What is the best time? Let me know in DM or send me a message on Subscribestar Patreon. Bhutan Bear is back, says, can you give me 30 seconds to write it, JF? You want to write a question to me? 30 seconds. All right, well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Did I miss a super chat? You missed a super chat, says Dead Star. Aquanote, I answered this super chat. Oh, Spindly Opinion. Yes, I forgot Spindly Opinion super chat. He says, why was every population homophobic and patriarchal up until yesterday? Have there been any populations which promote homosexuality and feminism, have children above replacement rate, or do they all die out? My impression is they all die out. So the typical way I approach this question is, of course, populations converge toward a natural evolutionary equilibrium in which they are rejecting homosexuality. And they are rejecting it simply because there is a signal passing from parents to children, signals of teaching about the world and how to best behave in the world to end up with babies. And of course, one of the big genetic interests of parents is to make sure that their children are heterosexual and performing heterosexual sex so that they have children in turn. Now, so that solves it as far as why is the past that way? The past is that way because it's always that way. And if it wasn't that way for a second, it would converge back toward that way. Now, as far as the patriarchy, I think that the patriarchy is simply a consequence of the asymmetry between eggs and sperm, and the fact that by its nature of the pregnancy, the fact that there's more energy investment on the production of the actual baby by the female, it binds the female to a local role in the house and the male to be more operating business, commerce, and war, etc. So because of this asymmetry, the signal from the father to the children becomes more important than the signal, not more important, but more controlling, because ultimately males are competing among each other for survival. And they are killing each other. And when they win, when they succeed at killing the other males, they end up taking control of the females. So that is the patriarchal flow of control is from male to females. Then the question, why would that stop being the case? Why would the patriarchy and homophobia suddenly be bad in 2022? And why did it happen so freshly in history? And I tend to explain this by a misfiring of the search for novelty. I think that novelty has been rewarding us way too much. It's like novelty allowed us to develop engines, electricity. Every time we have stick to something novel, it turned out to be good for us. It was good for our societies. It was allowing us to outcompete other societies. We have led war with the technologies we were developing, and those technologies were always new, always novel, and always better. and they've always helped us beat the enemy. So that means novelty has been too evolutionarily rewarding. Now this causes brains that want more and more novelty. Novelty is always good. I think that we've just reached the end of this, where we are at the peak novelty and the point at which curiosity doesn't quite serve as much as it used to be serving. And therefore, the novelty-seeking behavior of modern humans is misadjust to the current cultural context where novelty signals are dangerous to your reproduction. So we've reached the end of novelty seeking. That is, any sort of evolutionary drive, there will be a peak to it. It's like, oh yeah, it's good to have big teeth if you're a tiger, but there's a size of teeth that a size of tooth that at this point it's too costly to produce and it's not worth it very much more. Same thing happens, and that's what determines why the tooth is that long, but not that long. The same thing happens with novelty. Seeking novelty is good in the 16th century, it's good in the 17th century, it's good in the 18th century, but it's not good in 2022 because people are delivering novel behaviors that are not in your advantage. So that's how I explain the combination of the state of the past, as you point correctly, and the state of the present. Butane Bear is back, has sent a super chat. I'm happy that I've given him 30 seconds. I get an extra super chat tonight. He says, if my girlfriend's vagina is slightly too loose for my dick, does that mean she was previously penetrated by another dick bigger than mine? Absolutely not. In my experience, vagina looseness is not caused by increased sexual activity and the size of the penises of past partners. What it means is your girlfriend is fat.